This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Discover great brands like Brizo at your local Ferguson showroom.
At Houston Methodist Neal Cancer Center, leading oncologists work with specialists across multiple disciplines to heal all of you. Find care at 7 locations across Greater Houston. Houston Methodist, leading medicine.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's hell.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Contra, the podcast of AmericanPartisan.org, and brought to you by the Guerrilla's Guide to the Balfang Radio and the Guerrilla's Guide to Signals Intelligence, both of which you can find on Amazon.com as well as brushfeeder.store. And right now we've got a full restock of literally everything over at brushfeeder.store. And if something says that it is out of stock, trust me, we've got it on the way. Should be here very, very shortly. But enough about that. Enough about that. Got another awesome guest on today, a guy that longtime listeners will definitely recognize, somebody who is in the business of intelligence cultivation and conveying those daily products to your inbox. That's Matt Williams of Knightsbridge Limited. What's up, brother?
Hey, it's great to be here as always. How are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Yeah. It is certainly coming true, the old adage of may you live in interesting times. And we certainly do. I would say right off the top, we've got so many things to break down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, last week, Trump assassination attempt, which was narrowly avoided, you know, within millimeters of being avoided, thankfully. And now we have the investigations beginning into this. Of course, we have Senator Johnson's report, his preliminary report, which was released at the beginning of the week. It's pretty damning, not painting a very good picture at all of the Secret Service, nor law enforcement at the state level for Pennsylvania or the local level for the township of Butler. So we've got that. Of course, we have the investigations now on the congressional side, which has resulted in the resignation of Secret Service Director Cheadle, who, for somebody who's in charge, certainly, and I'm being way too kind here, for somebody who's in charge, she absolutely had no idea what was going on or when it was happening, at best, and criminal negligence at worst. And some of the things that she admitted to in her testimony, which was most notably pointed out to me, was the fact that she had made use of encrypted chat apps with other people in the senior executive service, as well as people in the U.S. Secret Service. So this is certainly a problem, and this is something that evades FOIA requests, which is typically the reason that they do that. But to me, as somebody who looks at it, like, there's no way that this level of negligence could have occurred at all levels. It's beginning to look a whole lot conspiratorial. Not only that, this is bringing us to the present. You know, we know that Joe Biden is out. He is a lame duck president at this point. We still aren't quite sure what his status in the White House is, other than, you know, continuing to be the president. He is set to address the nation tonight. We'll see whether or not it actually goes on. There's a lot of oddities about his letter dropping out from the as the Democrat nominee and the incumbent. So this is very rare that something like this would occur. The last time this has occurred was with Lyndon Baines Johnson. So in 1967, going into the 1968 elections. So all of these things in totes are certainly not painting a very good picture for the landscape politically, if you will. But that brings us to our topic that we're going to be discussing, because this is the question that is on literally everybody's mind right now regarding what is the status of the militant left. So with Vice President Kamala Harris now being the presumptive nominee, she's got the delegates from the Democratic Party. You have whatever the controlling interest of Black Lives Matter, saying that they are protesting this formally. And I think that it's my personal assessment that this is going to gain legs. You have a third party candidate, Cornel West, who is a very, very vocal and influential thinker in the Black Lives Matter and various dissident left-wing Marxist movements in the United States, who is also very vocal in opposition to Vice President's candidacy as a Democrat. So that kind of leaves us with the upcoming Democrat National Convention in Chicago. The stage has been set there. There's been a shooting in Springfield, which was really, really bad on part of law enforcement. If you haven't seen that video, please don't watch it. It's awful. Mm-hmm. But that one certainly will gain some legs in the protest sphere. So we're kind of seeing a storm rapidly develop of mass dissatisfaction on the left with both their governmental institution and the fact that they are going to be running full bore with their revolution. So mm-hmm. on your end, as someone who studies conflict and builds these reports based on what you're seeing domestically as well as internationally, what's going on with this? So, you know, peer into your crystal ball, where are we headed?
Yeah, sure. So in a word, chaos. The DNC is August 19 through 22. As you said, VP Harris has the delegates at this point to take that nomination. Largely what we're seeing, I'll start at a strategic level. Largely what we're seeing is great dissatisfaction among the further left elements, right? So BLM and Antifa is what comes to mind immediately for folks, but there's a lot of other groups out there as well that are quite dissatisfied with the selection of VP Harris, just due to her background, right? As a prosecutor in California, there were folks, most folks don't remember this, but back when she was running for president, there were some low grade protests then against her to throw her out of the primaries against Trump. That she wasn't qualified, and that's carried through today. Now that she's actually running for president, I think you're going to see a huge escalation around the DNC by these groups. There were already going to be protests The DNC was already going to be messier than the RNC from a protest, a civil unrest perspective, right? But throwing Harris in there is going to, you know, 3x, 4x what was planned. And so we're already seeing that, right? There are more resources being put into planning for these types of events. You're not seeing a lot that's being publicized right now as far as these groups calling for people to come to Chicago for the DNC. That's going to start up pretty quickly. You know, by the end of July, you'll start seeing flyers online and things like that. That's the plan anyway. And so I would expect it to be quite messy. And you're going to have a convergence of very different groups as well. So you're going to have the BLM crowd, right, which associates with Antifa quite a bit back and forth. You've got other radical groups as well that are kind of on that side. But then you've also got the pro-Palestinian groups, you know, Answer Coalition and a lot of others out there that are likely to be protesting outside the DNC as well. So it's not going to be a homogenous crowd by any stretch from a political perspective. You're going to have a crowd that's made up of a lot of different causes with a lot of different grievances and trying to take it to 10 because of this Harris selection within the party. So on a strategic level, that's what we would expect to see. On a bit of a more tactical level, getting down closer to the ground, violence is almost guaranteed at this point. I do think that the shooting you mentioned in Springfield, which was rough and uncalled for by the police, at least in my humble opinion, that's going to be bringing out the locals in a significant way. And there are indications that some of the local groups there in Chicago are holding off until the DNC. Let's make our protest count, right? Let's make our anti-cop protests get as many eyeballs as possible. Let's get on the media, the international media. Let's wait and hold off until the DNC. So that's another subset coming in that's going to have an impact overall on the environment around the DNC. Property damage, you know, graffiti, stuff like that, small fires, maybe large fires are within the realm of possibility. There are always fights. You're not likely to see wide-scale violence except against police officers. And by that, I mean, there really aren't any right-wing groups. You know, Proud Boys, for example, are not spinning up to go to the DNC, right? So while it's not going to be a homogenous crowd, you're also not likely to have a huge amount of animosity inside those crowds against subgroups, right? So it's going to be a police versus protester type situation. As far as numbers are concerned, sticking with a little bit more of a tactical level, a lot of these groups can pretty easily turn out 1,000 to 3,000 folks, almost at the drop of a hat. I would expect far more than that. 10,000 to 20,000 wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me to be a little higher than that. But a month out, the numbers are pretty hard to calculate. You need to see where the bus is running, right? A lot of these protests that you see in D.C., there are buses that are chartered from all over the country to get people to D.C. You see that pretty often, and you see that for major protest movements. Right now, we're not seeing a lot of that for the DNC, but we expect that will be coming. And once you start seeing the transportation situation shake out, then you can make more accurate assessments. But for now, certainly I would expect north of 10,000 and some at least low-grade violence, but my gut feeling is that it's not going to be so low-grade.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. But there's another question that I have in my mind. Mm-hmm. And that revolves around this dichotomy that I've talked about on the left in America between liberals who typically occupy the corporate spaces, governmental infrastructure spaces like, you know, libraries, education, so on and so forth, mm-hmm. Who are liberal. You know, and we all know these people are very annoying, you know, the mask Nazis and all that. But then you have the actual communist left, which is they're not one and the same. And so that I think that's manifesting into this election because those liberals would literally vote for anything. Okay, they would vote mm-hmm. for anything. They would vote for this Afghan war rug behind me long before because they are voting against Donald Trump. They don't care who it is. They're not concerned with what the outcome is, so long as he does not get in. And you have a lot of governmental people who are of that mindset. You have career military officers who are of that mindset. You have career bureaucratic types from D.C. and even at the state levels who are very much of that mindset, simply because the takeover of the Republican Party by the Make America Great Again faction, which we've seen on display now, that is cemented. That is a done deal coming out of the RNC.
Yes.
These people see the new MAGA crowd, because one of the things about the Make America Great Again movement is at its heart, it is anti-bureaucratic. It recognizes there's a problem with the bureaucratic state, and so it is anti-that. And that has been the focal point of a lot of its contention. But with that said, with the communist left, who is made up, comprised of this nebulous of different organizations out there, BLM, Antifa, John Brown Gun Club, the pro-Palestine, so the Free Gaza movement, which, Obama, very interestingly, is a definitely a shadow figment of from his days as an academic at Columbia. So with all that said, is this going to hurt Kamala Harris's chances, not only as being the presumptive nominee, because going into the convention, she's the presumptive nominee, but mm-hmm. is that going to put pressure on those delegates? Because it's not a done deal. Are they going to find somebody else and cave to that crowd? Or do they run the risk of just trying to ram her in there no matter what, no matter what the consequences are going to be?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. These far left groups, the true radicals, right? John Brown Gun Club, et cetera. These groups, by and large, don't vote in our elections, right? The goal, if you're a revolutionary, is to destroy the system and remake it in your own image, right? Voting does not accomplish that in any way, shape, or form. The system needs to collapse for a true revolutionary to have their revolution, right? And so really, by and large, the calculus for the Democrat Party isn't, are we losing voters among the far left? It's, is the far left doing something that makes us lose appeal to the vast majority of the left that aren't as radical? And the answer to that is probably not. Protesters are going to protest. America is becoming desensitized to protests. Years after the George Floyd incident and all the ensuing riots and the rise of Black Lives Matter, then you've had all these pro-Palestinian protests. I mean, America is starting to care a lot less about street action. Not to the extent that, France is, for example. France, it's the national pastime, basically, at this point. But we're getting there, right? So street action doesn't matter as much as it used to. And the DNC is going to understand that. So I don't think that that's going to really factor into their calculus on any significant way as to whether they run with Kamala or not. I think they care about polling numbers. And I think they care that Biden endorsed Harris. I think they care that the delegates are already going her direction. They're going to run with Harris at this point. The other factor is that others whose names were being floated to replace Biden before he actually dropped out, such as Newsom, after Trump was shot, the odds increased. You go look at betting markets, right? The odds increased of his winning the presidency. And nations, Saudi Arabia came right out and said they're going to assume another Trump presidency and begin preparing for it now. So the odds went up after that incident. And the smarter politicos out there, the Newsoms of the world, took a step back and essentially said, not this time. Whoever runs is who runs. Let Trump win, but I don't want to sacrifice my political career by losing to him and not have a shot in 2028. That's where the smart politicos are going. Harris is a natural choice. She's the VP. Biden endorsed her. There you go. It's kind of a done deal at this point. That doesn't mean there's not going to be some chaos at the DNC, inside the DNC, like there will be outside the DNC. There probably will be. There will be challengers, etc. But ultimately, I don't see logically, I don't see the DNC making moves based upon these leftist groups doing whatever it is that they do. If anything, they're going to paint them as radicals, because you don't want to be seen as encouraging that when you're coming up on a general election, right? I will say too that from a strategic perspective, if you put yourself into the hard left's mindset a little bit, the more chaos that ensues, the better, because again, you're trying to show the incompetence of the system. You're trying to show that the system that currently exists is failing the people. You're trying to bring that system down. The more chaos, the better. And what better time and what better place to implement those plans than at the DNC, when the whole world's watching and expecting that it will be contentious. There's an international component here as well, too. I mean, Iran is funding a lot of the pro-Palestinian protests. You think they aren't going to fund chaos at the DNC? Of course they are. They're going to encourage that. Countries that are enemies of the United States outright, such as Iran, North Korea, and countries that will likely become full enemies, maybe they're competitors at this point. The countries that are in those blocks, Iran, North Korea, Russia, China, etc., have long funded unrest in the United States. This is known at this point, right? And they're all being given a wonderful opportunity to do that on a larger scale at the DNC, but then throughout the rest of the year as well, right? You want to show American weakness? America's already projecting weakness. An incumbent president is not running. You're putting in a vice president that got, 1% of the primary vote last time, barely could compete, dropped out super early. You've got a candidate on the other side that took a bullet. America looks politically weak and politically in absolute chaos. And that's going to be on display at the DNC. So, hey, if you're in opposition to America, now's your time. Now's your time to generate even more chaos. You won't find a better environment than you have right now, as far as those countries are concerned. So our projections were always that there would be significant protests and street action around the election, spiking if Trump were to win the election all the way through the inauguration. We were expecting that, but the trajectory is a little steeper now than what we had assessed back in May, for example. So yeah, would expect a lot of action and a lot of negative press out of that action. It's not going to be calm at this point. Just assume it will not be.
So on that note, kind of looking ahead, you know, mm-hmm. we know what the militant left is going to do and what they're going to engage in, at least initially, with the second term of Donald Trump. We know that. That's a foregone right. conclusion. You know, I mean, even Ray Charles could see that coming, you know. But by your assessment, this is essentially saying that the Democrat Party, which is also, you know, I'm congruent in this assessment as well. I've made this in the past, that they are very much at odds with militant left, and you're concurring with that.
Yes.
What happens then? Let's say, you know, obviously worst case scenario for conservatives, Kamala Harris becomes president.
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority. Discover great brands like Brizo at your local Ferguson showroom.
Where does the militant left go from there? Because mm-hmm. not only does she have a track record that is horribly unpopular, with a lot of hard left causes. She's a, you know, very unlikable person. You know, we know all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that also places the hard left, the militant left, in a kind of a dangerous situation, because now it's almost a catch 22 for them. Do they continue doing what they're doing? Do they continue their activities, their revolutionary activities? Because you're 100% right. You point out these are revolutionaries. They don't really care about the optics. They definitely don't vote. They're not worried about that. They're not worried about the fallout of the system. But at the same time, they are politically very, very inconvenient for the Democrats. So let's say going into 2025, let's say the outcome of November 24's election is going to the outcome is a Harris presidency. She's inaugurated in January. Worst case scenario here. Where does the militant left go from there?
Yeah. So the militant left is kind of caught between a rock and a hard place here, right? They view Trump as a fascist dictator type individual. Their recruiting was stellar during the Trump years, by the way. but then the other candidate is a former prosecutor that they despise. So assuming a Harris win, the angle here for the militant left is no longer protest against the president directly. Generally, the angle is the system is failing you politically, and the options you're being given is a fascist dictator or a wannabe fascist dictator with a history, with a terrible prosecutorial history. That's the angle if you are the militant left. And you're pushing that angle out that there's got to be a better system. There's got to be a better way forward. You know, if the economy were to struggle, they're going to latch onto that. If the war in Gaza continues, they'll continue to work that angle as well. A lot of it will depend on what exactly a Harris presidency would do. What are the policies going to be? Is it just more Biden-esque policies? Is it something radically different? It's a little bit unknown exactly what Harris's policies would be at this point. She hasn't had a lot of time to reach back 4 years to her primary campaign and start pulling out her actual position. So right now it's more or less mirroring Biden's. But if there are actions that are, you know, damaging to the political left or something they can latch onto, they will. But I don't think you're going to see these huge, significant anti-Harris protests like you would if Trump were to win, or like you would around election time. You're just going to see continue to recruit, continue to show how even the Democrats can't give you a good candidate, right? That's their pitch to Democrats, to those on the left, is this is your party whom you have believed in all these years and whom you vote for, and look at who they gave you. This is a disaster. The system is a disaster. We need something better. But you won't see the street protests like you will if Trump's elected. If Trump's elected, it's all hands on deck. You know, going 0 to 60 immediately, chaos in the streets. You know, you can see 2020 all over again if Trump were to be reelected. I don't think that's what you see if Harris wins the presidency. It's the messaging is harder, right? The marketing is more difficult in that situation, and your marketing is not going to appeal to as many people on the left under a Harris presidency as it would under a Trump presidency. So if you take, if you think about this strategically as well. If I was the head honcho, right? If I was the chief of all the leftist movement groups and such in America, I would really be pulling for a Trump presidency. Recruiting numbers skyrocket during a Trump presidency. The ability to protest skyrockets during a Trump presidency. Your funding is through the roof during a Trump presidency. Everything you want as a leader of a leftist group happens during a Trump presidency. Your messaging is better. Your organization is easier. You name it, right? It is in your favor. You have someone whom you can call a fascist dictator. And a lot of folks on the left, on the Democrat side of the aisle, will at least nod along, right? And say, well, you know, they're trying to get rid of the dictator. So that's straightforward and easy and good for your movement. Harris, not nearly as much, right? And an example of that too is the mass protests that we saw during the Trump presidency died as soon as Biden took office. You don't see Antifa and Proud Boy duking it out in Portland anymore, right? You don't see these 100,000 person protests anymore under the Biden presidency. So, hey, if you're the left, you got to be rooting for Trump, to be completely honest, because it's just better for you. It's better for business at that point. Strategically, that's where I would go strategically. I don't know if these groups are going that way. Some of these groups are taking the position, death to all kings, basically. And there was actually a banner that said death to all kings in New York on July 4th, actually. And it had it said Biden on one side and Trump on the other, right? Just showing that,
yeah,
we're in opposition to anyone that takes this position that's not our guy or our girl, you know. So that's where I think this is going.
So yeah, I concur with that. I'm going to take it a step further. There's, you know, on this show, I've made a lot of allusions to a, I don't necessarily want to call it a political realignment, because that's not what it is. I think that's incorrect terminology. But you will see, and I do contend very much, and I have not changed my stance on this, that you are going to see strange bedfellows in action. And we're already kind of seeing that. There's elements of the right who are you know, obviously anti-Israel, and they find themselves aligned with the hard left that has some of the same goals. You're seeing traditional liberals who are supporting Trump simply over the Israeli issue. Interestingly enough, I thought that this was very fascinating, that the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, wrote a personal letter to Trump lamenting the fact that he got shot. And I thought this was odd. Very sure. I mean, you know, who doesn't enjoy some civility in the world and magnanimity that people can set aside differences, especially as Trump has been a very staunch supporter of Israel. You know, this much is known, even though him and Netanyahu have been at odds, particularly of late, on a number of policies. And of course, Netanyahu finds himself at odds with the Biden administration as well. But more to the point, we're seeing the emergence of people that are coalescing around that issue, as well as a couple of others that I think really stems from a greater level of dissatisfaction and looking for any alternative answer. And one of these very interestingly is this character going by the name of Jackson Hinkle. I don't know if that's really his name. I haven't done too deep of a dive on his early life section, but I've noticed that he's popping up rapidly. Whoever his handlers are, very social media adept. Now, it's my assessment on him personally, and those in orbit around him. So there's a few who are that, you know, Alexander Dugin is certainly got his finger on a scale of influence, but that he is an influence agent of the Kremlin. You know, we know this, and because he is married to a Russian national, not just any Russian national, but she was a pageant queen, you know. So his founding of the American Communist Party, which has been it's been blasted out there on social media. It's very interesting to me because the packaging and the branding of this thing is not meant to attract Antifa. That's not who they're going after here.
Right.
They're going, it looks like to me, the way that this is packaged and the way that this is being presented with its branding and everything is actually to go after the same people who would be attracted to Patriot Front. It's very interesting to me that he, of course, he was on Alex Jones and, you know, he got his exposure that way, and he's claiming that he's a nationalist and a Marxist simultaneously, which is incongruent with any leftist value that I'm aware of, and I'm very well educated on the topic. So I think that this is very interesting, very, very interesting, and that's the circles that this guy orbits in. But he does have his fan club on the militant left as well. And so where I'm going with this, in addition to just making the audience aware of, you know, understanding the influence of foreign propaganda when you see it, because that's what this is a classic example of that. In my mind, at least, my own assessment, you may differ on it. Looking at the foreign influence, he is definitely Chinese influence operations are typically more Democrat oriented. This looks Russian, and the Russian operation has been courting the militant right now for a while. And that's what this looks like to me. But he's also attracting lefties. And so in your assessment, I don't know if you know, you'll have really been following any of this closely or carefully. I'm sure that it has been on your radar. Where do you see that going? And do you think that this is going to manifest in what we're going to see with the upcoming Democrat National Convention, and where the militant left is going with the road ahead?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because political affiliation is not linear. Right. It's a sphere. So it's possible there are places where militant right meets militant left, right, along that political spectrum. In Hinkle's case, I haven't dug into him much. It could be that folks on my team have, and I just haven't seen those specific reports. He's got almost 3 million followers on X, and he's all over the internet, right? So there are a lot of indicators, at the very least, that he's being handled by international assets. I would agree with you that it looks more Russian than Chinese, but don't have any evidence directly of that. Just the look and feel of what he posts, how he posts it, and who he's trying to appeal to, makes me think that it's more of a Moscow operation than a Beijing. He's a wildly unreliable source. So if you're familiar with the Admiralty Code, just keep scrolling down. How about that? Not to the last one, because the last one's unknown. but keep scrolling down. Wherever you think he is, he's probably rung beneath that, right? Very, very unreliable, just straight propagandist. That's all it is. It's propaganda, but it's very targeted towards younger disaffected males. That's what that's his target audience, right? And he heavily supports the American Communist Party. He makes that very clear in his post. It's in his bio, you know, on his profile on X. You can click straight through to the American Communist Party. So he's unashamedly coming out on the side of communism. But what he did first is he built a large audience of this masculine, almost Make America Great Again type feel. And he built the audience, and over the years has shifted that audience over to real America is communist America, right? And so that has all the earmarks of coming from, you know, being originated in a communist country. Because the shift is fairly noticeable over time. And it's one of these scenarios too, where he's blatant about it. He's very, very blatant about his pro-Russia views, pro-Russia, anti-Ukraine, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, even specifically pro-Hamas. And he's very blatant about it. And so anyone who sees that knows pretty quickly what his positions are. He's not as dangerous in my mind as those who are a little more subtle, right? That are a little more subtle about the points they're trying to get across. Hinkle's so blatant about it that, hey, if that's what you agree, go for it. If not, you know pretty quickly if this isn't somebody you want to associate with. But for every one Jackson Hinkle, there are 50 who are also potentially being controlled by foreign assets and are being a lot more subtle about it. And those are the ones you got to watch out for, because misinformation usually has a point, and you have to dig a little more to try to figure out what that point is. And in the era of social media in which we live, that becomes increasingly difficult. That's one of the primary reasons why we even have a global hotspot report at Knightsbridge. We've operated for years without one. But based upon the current environment and the fact that validated information is so hard to find, I mean, that's the entire impetus behind having that report in the first place, is people want verified information and we provide it.
Can you give
us not to get salesy on you?
No, not at all. I mean, because it's information that people need. Every conduit of verified information that people can get their hands on, they need to be doing it. It's right. Critical, you know, and it's not fluff. All right. This is verified. We know that this happened. This is what's going on. And this is what the projection is. There's no agenda to it. This is what it is. Right.
Right.
But
yes,
going back to the foreign actors and foreign influence, because, you know, we know coming out of the 2016 election that foreign influence became the forefront, and that was what a lot of the criticisms that was levied and the accusations that were levied at President Trump and the larger Republican Party. They're continuing to do this, by the way. They never stop. Democrats never stop. We had the 51 intelligence officials, and we're all senior executive service guys that lied, flat out lied. They knew they lied. They knew they lied before they ever signed anything. They knew they lied before they ever even thought about making a statement. They were lying because it was all politics. But regardless of that, we do know that there was a substantial foreign influence in the election, because there always is. There always is. This is not a secret. And so, you know, you alluded to, for every one Jackson Hinkle, who I think is a pretty egregious example of it, and that's why I've warned people, because I've had others who've brought him up to me. And I've been kind of observing his habits for a little bit now. First, kind of when he came onto the radar, and then has popularity exploded out of nowhere. That's usually an indicator to me. But you said for every one of those, there are 50 who are far more subtle about it. Who are the more egregious people, if you care to name? Just give a couple of examples.
Of the more egregious? Sure. I mean, there are a lot of folks out there who are over the top in their accusations, over the top in their material. And like I said, I can't prove that anyone's taking money from anyone else, right? That's not something that we have access to. But there are some accounts that egregiously spread bad information for a political purpose. They're just propagandists, right? You've got your folks out there like Stu Peters, the entire crew, the Natural News crew, right? They post a lot of stuff, and a lot of that ends up being false. Some of it doesn't, you know, but if you're following a source, if you're following a news outlet, a media outlet, someone on social media networks, and you analyze what they're saying, maybe you go back 6 months, go back a year and see how those predictions panned out. That'll give you a better idea of their validity and their accuracy rate. And if you're looking at an accuracy rate of 5%, 10%, shoot, 50%, why are you wasting your time? Right? Why are you wasting your time? They may have a nugget every now and then, but if you're wading 1,000 yards through trash to get to the nugget, is it really worth it? Is your time, is your mental energy worth it? Is all the things that maybe you believe that turned out to be false, is it worth that? And the answer is, in my opinion, of course, is no, it's definitely not. You need high accuracy rate sources. And social media amplifies those who make bombastic claims, because those are the messages, the tweets or the posts, as they're now called, the Facebook messages. That's what gets passed around. Have you seen this? You know, can't verify this, but look, you know, don't know if this is true, but look at this. That's where you make ad revenue. That's where you gain influence. That's where you gain power, really, is by posting these bombastic claims, knowing that 99.9% of people won't try to verify it, and they won't go back to see what your accuracy rate is 6 months later. They're just going to go along with it and they're going to follow you, and you know, you're going to get a lot of clout, you're going to make money off of it, and that's what is incentivized. So that's the environment. Now, if you're a foreign intelligence agency that wants to see chaos in the United States, you want things to be uncertain and unclear, or you simply want to pass along your propaganda, what better environment could you have than the current environment? People are incentivized to do these things. People are, human beings want money, right? Not very many people are going to turn down a payday. But at the same time, if you're feeding information, even if the person on social media, for example, doesn't know that that information is coming from the Kremlin, for example, there's a very real possibility out there that the folks we're talking about, Natural News, Stu Peter, Jackson Hinkle, they're in signal groups that they think are super reliable. They're being fed information, and they don't have the foggiest idea that it's coming from the Kremlin or Beijing or Iran or anywhere else. They just think it's breaking news and good information that aligns with their worldview, and so they're going to pass it along. That's a very real scenario too. Most people who are influenced and affected by foreign intelligence agencies don't know it. They don't know that they are. You're not getting a check from the Kremlin in your mailbox, right? That direct deposit doesn't say, CCP on it, right? But it's shell companies, it's all these other ways to get funds and material across that align with someone's worldview already that they want to blast out there for a lot of reasons. So these are the people too who can be a little more subtle at times. Maybe naturally they're that way. Maybe they are a little less certain about the quality of the information they're getting. Maybe they're not the type of person that blasts out that Jimmy Carter's dead because they saw a letter and didn't do 1 ounce of investigation into it, like a lot of people did, right? There's a lot of people out there that just want the dopamine hit of the clicks and the likes and a little bit of ad revenue maybe, and want to spread their worldview around. And those people are really easy to influence if you can get into their, you know, if they can get into their private chats and things like that. It's basic. I mean, it's basic stuff for a foreign intelligence agency. This is not hard. It's not hard for any intelligence agency, public or private, to do these kinds of things. So there's a wide range of possibilities here. And ultimately, what do you do about it? You're careful who you believe. You're careful who you follow, who you believe. You don't spread about rumors that are unverified, you know, to your social networks, to your groups, to your friends and family. You follow sources that mean something and that aren't heavily biased, heavily partisan, and simply trying to get their agenda across to more and more people, or just make a buck, you know, on social media clout, that kind of thing. It takes a lot more work and it's not as much fun that way. You don't get the dopamine hits that way like you do just by spreading about everything else that aligns with your bias. But if you want to be known as someone who is trustworthy among friends and family, if you want to be known as someone who does a little bit of validation before they spread things around, if that's important to you, then you'll be careful with folks like Hinkle, who has a terrible track record of accuracy, or anyone else like him.
So I think that was an excellent answer. And that's something that we need to be warning people about. Of course, you always get the pushback on that. But I like the nice guy that tells me all the things, you know. Like, I recognize I'm in that space as well. There's a lot of P.T. Barnum out there. And sure. You know, that's what I'm going to say about that. But as it pertains to foreign influence operations, I see this expanding in a big way, because why wouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you do that? Just as you pointed out. And now we're looking at, as we head forward into 2025, selection season is going to be highly contentious. I think it's very much a three-way dance. You have the Republicans. I think that your neocons are going to sit this one out. Body language at the RNC told us the whole story.
Yes.
You know, their body language, the body language of, you know, Lindsey Graham, body language of you know, your traditional, we'll say the Bush era Republicans, really, really told us the entire story. And, you know, we have that. We have the liberals who literally would vote for a head of lettuce because they're voting against Donald Trump. They don't care. You have the bureaucratic class that is rolled into that is going to be voting, you know, basically in lockstep with the Democratic Party, because the Democrat Party now has become the party of the bureaucracy. That plain and simple, that's what it is. In years past, with all the government agencies, you kind of picked the team that you were going to be on. You were either red or blue, but at the end of the day, you know, you got your 4 years or your 8 years or, you know, some more, and then the managerial class would swap, and they would, you know, and the outgoing ones would go occupy CEO positions somewhere, and, you know, some cushy job, and then they would get called back. And those days are over. I think those days are over. And then you have, of course, the militant left. With that said, the foreign influence operations, I see ramping up and hitting a fever pitch to the point of pushing us into a kinetic conflict domestically. I see that happening, and I see that happening, one, to target the disaffected population on either side, right or left. That's kind of where, you know, the Jackson Hinkle type characters exist. But we've also got another dimension to this that I've repeated over and over again. We've talked about this on the show, you and I, in the past, that there are a lot of foreign influence operatives now that have come across the border with the illegal immigrant community who are here now. Most contemporarily, I think the largest population of them are Venezuelan, and we would be very foolish to assume that they don't have that. At least we'll be conservative and say one out of every 20 doesn't have some level of martial training, whether that is in a formalized military sense, whether, you know, they actually put on a uniform, or they were part of a well-organized criminal organization, which I consider to be a type of martial training as well. The discipline, the level of organizations, very similar in criminal organizations. So with that said, we know that Venezuela, Maduro, coming right off of an election, is completely unreported in the United States. He's got another term, shocker, shocker. He is deeply entrenched with both the Russians and the Chinese. I don't see him going anywhere, and if we're going to assume anything, we have to assume the worst, that they are going to take advantage of the further political destabilization here in the United States. So with that said, going forward, what do you think their level of influence and their activities is going to be?
Sure. So I agree with your assessment that the influence operations will increase significantly through the rest of the year, right? Yes, I think that's certain, virtually certain to happen. As far as things that are a bit more kinetic, I think that there is a greater opportunity to deploy those military assets, those bad actors in the United States based on that environment, based on the environment we're currently in. My guess is that the plans are not fully formed. Trump just got shot. Not recently. Biden dropped out recently. You're right. Harris is taking the nomination. That's all very recent. And my guess is that the full assessments haven't been made just yet. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see increasing operations, right? So sabotage, cyber attacks would fall into that category. Espionage, attempts to drive the chaos in the U.S. I would expect to see all of those things. I think that the odds of a domestic conflict remain pretty low. I wouldn't project anything like that. I think that the environment is more heated, of course, and I think the environment's going to remain heated if not continue to, you know, move up and to the right. I think those are almost givens at this point. And I think foreign actors could be doing what they can do. The threshold for a domestic conflict is a tough one to step across. So I'm not necessarily seeing that. I think you'd have to have a black swan event to fully trigger something along those lines. But yeah, expect more chaos, expect more misinformation and disinformation, more street action. I think it's safe to assume that enemies of America will be doing all they can to spur chaos. I think that one of the most dangerous scenarios out there, quite frankly, is that based upon this political chaos, is that if Trump were to win in November, that China takes the opportunity and moves on Taiwan before January. That I think that's the most dangerous situation, because the assumption there is that they would be able to take most, if not the entire island, pretty quickly. They could get a foothold quickly. They could take enough of the island in a fast enough manner to where Biden, on the way out the door, isn't likely to do much about it. And Trump, by the time he takes office, it's going to be too late. Right. And the prime time to invade is either October, November, or April, May, based upon environmental factors. The strait gets pretty rough the other months of the year. That's a dangerous scenario domestically. I'm bringing this back around to domestic. The reason that's so dangerous domestically is that there are extremely high odds that if or when China moves on Taiwan, that there are significant disruptions to the American way of life here. There are significant disruptions via cyber attacks. There are the many thousands of folks who have crossed the southern border who are Chinese, a lot of them Chinese young men. They're not all operatives, but Beijing would be stupid to send no operatives, right? And they're not stupid. So you can logically assume that some of those are. Those folks would be activated. So you could have a situation in the U.S. where you're coming through significant mis- and disinformation campaigns. Trump gets elected. The radical left, the Antifa types, are doing everything they can to protest, right? It's a tense, contentious time in America. And on top of that, China goes after Taiwan, massive cyber attacks at home. You're not going to be getting supplies out of China. So think COVID, you know, shortages, but worse. That's a terrible situation for the United States. In that scenario, I could see domestic conflict, because you've got a black swan event. You've got serious disruption to the way of life. You've got people who would not participate in something like that who now might. That I could see it in that scenario. And I think that's the most dangerous situation going forward for the United States over the next, you know, year or so. Outside of something like that, I don't see domestic conflict outside of street action. But that's my assessment. I've been wrong before. So we'll see.
I mean, that's pretty congruent with the way that I see it. I certainly think that my assessment on the risk of civil conflict is that in the likely outcome that Donald Trump is elected, I do think that it is likely. That is, of course, the reason I'm kind of parsing my words here is that, you know, we know they're going to cheat. Okay. And I don't want to be that guy that's the Pollyanna type. Oh, hey, guys, you know, we got this. We're going to win.
Show me an election. I'll show you an election in which there was cheating. There's always cheating.
Well, and we have a large swath of the population who will literally vote for anything that is running against Donald Trump. They don't care. Doesn't matter. Okay. And so when you factor that in, along with the fact that you have, you're going to have election fraud. That's going to happen. We did not resolve Arizona. We did not resolve Pennsylvania. We did not resolve Michigan. In fact, they made it criminal to try and get to the bottom of it in Michigan. You know, you cannot make this stuff up. And here we are. So we did not get to the bottom of the 2020 election. They did it again in the midterms. They're going to do it again now. And you have the bureaucratic state who really wants Kamala Harris in there to rubber stamp everything that it is they're going to do, because it's business as usual. You know, they've got that taste of power. They're going to maintain it. You know, and neocons getting pushed out, that's going to exacerbate the situation that much more. Right. So, you know, I'm just throwing that warning out there. But either way that this breaks down, people really need to be on their toes, because I think personally this thing could turn very ugly domestically in a hurry. I think we came literally a couple millimeters away from that happening just a week ago. And, you know, it's that threat is still there. That would have been the major inflection point, which we still not have not had, but we're headed there one way or another. I think at this point it's an inevitability that these things are going to occur. It's just when it happens at this point. So, you know, with that go ahead.
I don't disagree with you. I think my timeline's longer. I think that's the only maybe point of disagreement between us is, yes, I think that America is on the trajectory to domestic conflict. And we've been on that trajectory for a long time. My assessment is that we've got the trajectory is just longer. And I'm, you know, to be honest, I'm sometimes in the minority on that. And that's OK. I'm fine with that. But generally speaking, my trajectory is longer than most folks when it comes to that happening. But we're on the path. And we can get off the path. There's exit ramps, but we haven't, and we're still marching in that direction for eventually, you know, a rough time in the country.
Yep. The troubles are brewing. With that said, brother, we are coming up on the hour. Matt Williams of Knightsbridge Limited. How can people find and follow you?
Sure. Knightsbridge.ltd is our website. You can find us on social media platform X at KBR_Intel. I am on X at Matt Likes Intel. We provide a variety of services. We have private clients where we do everything from advanced research projects, deep dives, to real-time event tracking and analysis, Overwatch type services. We also, for everyone else, we release the Global Hotspot Report 5 days a week. It is nonpartisan. It is unbiased. We try to come in with just the facts and good, clean analysis is what we're focused on, right? And we cover everything. We cover the entire globe. So you get anywhere from 5 to 10 items a day in a report. If it happened globally and it's relevant, if it's in a war zone and it's relevant, if it increases, decreases risk, if it's economic or financial in nature, if it's radical groups, we cover it. And so we send that out. That's available all on our website. Knightsbridge.ltd. Code Scout is still active, and I don't think it'll ever be deactivated. So you'll get a free month if you put Scout in at Knightsbridge.ltd.
There y'all go. Support those that support us. With that said, folks, keep your head on a swivel. It ain't going nowhere better from here. Okay. I do think that our best days are ahead of us, but we got a long, bumpy road till we get there. Anyhow, going to be on the air tonight with Lieutenant Colonel Murray. I'm going to be joined by another couple of special guests over there on his channel on Rumble. And, of course, tomorrow night we are going to be live with Sons of Liberty, live show here on Podbean. So, anyhow, with that said, great to be with all of you once more. God bless, and I will talk to you again very, very soon. Zensi Scout out.
At Houston Methodist Neal Cancer Center,
Leading oncologists work with specialists across multiple disciplines to heal all of you. Find care at 7 locations across Greater Houston. Houston Methodist, leading medicine.
From West Texas to the White House, Kent Hance is the best storyteller in Texas.
As soon as you get elected, you're going to get a lot of letters from people who have a relative in prison. I had Vicki Nixon. I put her in charge. In the first file she wrote me, her recommendation was us to try to get involved and see if we could double his prison time.
With stories from West Texas to the White House, Kent Hance, the best storyteller in Texas podcast, is available anywhere you get podcasts.